And welcome back to Coast with our guest, Seth Breedlove. And we're talking about his films, and we're talking about what creatures could be out there. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We'll get to your calls in just a second with our special guest, Seth Breedlove. Seth, tell me about these monster days that you've got scheduled.
Oh, yeah. We did a premiere event last year for Minerva Monster because it kind of bloomed beyond what we expected it to be. You know, originally it was supposed to be this little kind of independent film that we were going to release locally, and then we ended up throwing a kind of an event in Minerva, Ohio itself. And last year, all we did was premiere Minerva Monster Day. We showed it four times. We sold out every showing at the Roxy Theater, and we ended up with about 1,200 people coming out to see our movie, which in a town like Minerva, 1,200 people kind of floods the entire downtown area. So this year, we kind of wanted to do something like what I've always wanted to see, which is a kind of a cryptozoology film festival and conference. I've never seen a straight up, you know, cryptid or paranormal themed film festival. So I wanted to kind of turn this event from just small town monsters movies into something where I could invite other guys that I know are making kind of independent movies that focus on these subjects. So I invited some friends, some guys that I've known, you know, for the last year or so who are out there kind of producing their own, you know, cryptozoology themed films. So this year in Minerva on September 23rd and 24th, we're hosting a film festival, an amateur film festival on Friday, September 23rd. And then on Sunday is on Saturday, the 24th, is kind of our big Minerva Monster Day event. And this year it's taking place in the community park, and then the films are going to be screened in the high school gym. So we're actually going to bring in this huge screen. We're going to have seats set up, and you're going to be able to watch like a whole slew of cryptid themed films. You know, we've got R2, obviously, Minerva Monster and Beast of Whitehall. We've got a movie called I've Seen Bigfoot that was directed by a guy in PA who I got to meet last year, Peter Weimer. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Alexander Petikov's Mystery at Loch Ness short. And he's also bringing, we just announced it yesterday, he's bringing his new series, which is called Sasquatch Out of the Shadows. He's bringing an episode of that to kind of premiere at the event. And then we've got one of our big things that we're doing is we're actually going to show the first kind of sneak preview of Boggy Creek Monster. It's not going to be the full film, but it's going to be a good little chunk of the movie. And we're also bringing all the Small Town Monsters crew that actually went to Fowke to film the movie to the event to kind of do a little bit, you know, about that movie. And then we've got a surprise movie. I was hoping to announce it tonight, but I'm not 100% sure yet if it's locked in, so I can't announce it. But we've got a big movie planned as the closing film for Minerva Monster Day. And then we've got Lauren Coleman coming as our guest of honor.
Oh, he's a great guy. Great guy.
Yeah, he's going to come out to talk about, honestly, I'm not 100% sure. I know it's going to center somewhat around the Minerva Monster case itself, and then whatever else he wants to talk about. He's kind of the cryptid godfather. So anything he wants to talk about would be awesome because I'm kind of a fanboy when it comes to Lauren. And then we also do want to, we've got a guy coming who I'm friends with named Dave Knopp, and he does DIY filmmaking stuff. So if you're into filmmaking, we're also trying to cover those bases as well, because this is supposed to be friendly to guys like myself, guys with cameras and some talent who can go kind of go out and make their own projects. You know, it's very difficult to get movies made like what we're making without some sort of studio backing or some sort of massive budget.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. How do you raise your money? Kickstarter?
With Minerva Monster, we self-funded it until we got to post-production, and then we ran a Kickstarter, and we raised $6,000 to do kind of DVDs and all that stuff. Beast of Whitehall was entirely self-funded, pretty much out of my pocket to make that one. And then Boggy Creek Monster, we ran a Kickstarter campaign last February. We asked for $9,000 and we raised $17,000. So we've been doing really well as far as crowdfunding goes. But it's unbelievable the amount of support you can raise within, you know, this kind of community. I think there's a real hunger for the type of films we're making, you know, the no
oh,
overblown
my God.
Recreation,
absolutely.
No craziness, you know, just kind of straight ahead retellings of these cases.
You don't embellish. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Let's take some calls. We're lining up here for you. We'll start by going to Doug in Sayreville, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
We are fine. Thank you.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Very interesting show, which really piques my interest. I happen to have sent in a video clip to Animal Planet for Finding Bigfoot. And I was contacted within 72 hours by the time the video arrived there. I got a call from Matt Moneymaker, who runs the show there. And they were pretty impressed with the piece of footage that I had. In fact, they went ahead and they did a special on it. And they had showed it was titled The New York Baby Bigfoot. It was the one with the Bigfoot in the tree swinging through the branches. I'm not sure if you've seen that one or not. But what had happened was I had videotaped this in 97, and I did this while listening to a friend discuss on how he planned to maintain the fire for the night, the campfire. And this was going on in the background, and it was never noticed. Until 2000, I believe, 6, and my wife, she's yelling at me, get these tapes out of here, you got them stacked up. I was going ahead and taking them and redubbing them onto the beta, and she went ahead and started screaming, come in here, come, what's this in the tree here? And I went in there, my jaw dropped, and there it was, hanging from one branch, swinging to another. And I had, like I said, I was contacted right away when I sent them out a video.
Is this a video that has like a little campfire in it?
Correct. Correct. That's
you. Okay.
And they had picked me up a week later. They sent a car down for me, and they took me back up there, upstate New York. It was it originally happened in an apple orchard where there was a concert to be that weekend. So we had gotten there the day before to get a good camping site. And when we went ahead and filmed this, we had no idea that this was going on in the background. And like I said, it was filmed in 97, and it wasn't until 2006 that it had popped up with her recognizing it, saying, what is this thing? What is this? And when they went ahead and asked me for permission to use it for the show and whatnot, I had spoke with Bobo Fay, and he had mentioned to me that he said it's going to be, he says, I think this is one of the best 5 videos that I've seen. And he says, we've also spoken with Jane Goodall, and she's for certain that it's a biped. He says, there's no tail on it that is concernable, mm-hmm. and which I didn't know when I had seen played it on my TV.
Well, it's not easy to see. And now you've thermal imaged it. Somebody has, right?
Correct. What they had done was they had brightened, because it was about 7:30, quarter to 8 at night. They had brightened the background, and they zoomed in a little bit on it, so they did improve the original quality of the video that I had captured. And what they had told me, this is straight out, there's no reason why there should be a monkey out there in the woods. And they said, did you realize where it came from? I said, I just noticed it swinging from the one tree to the other. Well, when they had gone ahead and amplified the film, they had made it brighter, and by doing so, they pulled out another entity, I guess you'd call it. They said it appeared to be between 7 and 7.5 feet tall, come walking from one a pile of bushes toward the two trees. When it stopped at the tree, that's when the smaller one had leaped off his shoulder onto the trees and started swinging around there. But that I didn't see because my TV wasn't capable of going that bright. enough that I could see, you know, in the shadows.
All right, Doug, I'm going to direct Seth to that. You can find that just by going to YouTube, Seth, if you want.
Yeah, I've seen this video.
You have, okay.
Yeah, I'm actually...
Something's back there.
Yeah, and you and I talked about on Beyond Belief when I was on. We talked a little bit about videos, and I expressed my skepticism for a great number of them. I do find this video to be really fascinating because you're obviously looking at what looks like a primate. It's definitely not a person swinging around, and it does seem, like he said, it does seem to be a biped.
Yeah. And what's a biped doing out there?
Right.
Do some of these creatures, if they're apes, let's say, or monkeys, do they escape from a local zoo and they just lost track of it, or what?
Well, here in Ohio, curiously enough, they call this a gateway state. And back in the day, I guess there were a lot of exotic animals that were brought into the state. And a lot of the exotic animal farms in Ohio are still able to operate. So here, typically, if you hear reports of like a monkey, the assumption is that it escaped, you know, from someone's kind of farm somewhere or something like that. I know where I grew up, there was a exotic animal farm probably 20 minutes away. A lion escaped one particular summer and roamed around for like a month and a half without them being able to find it.
Well, they know how to hide, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Next up, we go to Mark in Utah at Hill Air Force Base, west of the Rockies. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling.
Hey, great show tonight. I was just calling to tell about a couple of Sasquatch encounters.
Sure,
I had.
Go ahead.
Okay, the first one was in Layton, and it was in this forest area that's in the middle of these subdivisions. And I was walking home in the middle of the night. It was like 1 or 2 in the morning. And I see this, like, gray Chewbacca creature about 100 to 150 feet away from me walking up the hill. And then it went into these scrub oak that were just over its waist, but were about shoulder to head high to me. And it would have had to have crouched down in those scrub oak because I would have seen it as I walked up the road, the dirt road, I would have seen it in the neighborhood down below. So it crouched down in the scrub oak. But anyway, that's the first one. I was 18, and I'm 44 now. But the second one was up in the mountain, about halfway up the mountain in the Fruit Heights area. And I was hiking on this trail over there, and I hear this really deep, really loud wah. It was like wah, and I mean, when I heard it, I was thinking like it was an electronic noise, because it didn't sound like a creature noise, and it was like my mind said it didn't even happen, but it was really loud and really close, and there was no way a human could have made it unless they had like a DJ set up.
Right, exactly, out there.
Yeah. I was thinking of the Sasquatch. I didn't see any other footprints out there either. So, I mean, there weren't humans that followed the trail that I was on, and that was pretty much the only trail up to that area.
That's a great story. Tell us about sounds, Seth. What do we know about the sounds these creatures apparently make?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. We just did a library presentation last week, and a guy got up and wanted to tell us. He actually came to the event specifically to tell us his story. He's not a Bigfooter. He's not a Bigfoot believer, but he was out hunting up in, and I think he said Vermont. It wasn't Ohio, but he was up in Vermont hunting. And he said he was way back in the woods, and something he thought was, you know, less than a few yards away from him huffed at him. And the way he described it, I mean, I'm not going to do an impression, but the way he described it was this very, you know, masculine, almost like a gorilla kind of grunt, more so than a huff, but it was very powerful. And when he described it, he said he's heard deer make that kind of same noise, and he's heard bear make that, you know, because they both do that same sort of thing. He said it was not a bear and it was not a deer. He said the other thing about it was how powerful it was. It sounded like it was coming from extremely powerful lungs. And when I talked to our last caller had mentioned finding Bigfoot. I talked to Cliff Berrickman at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference a couple of years ago, and Cliff actually told me a story about hearing a grunt similar to what this guy described, because they both did an impression of both of the impressions sounded similar. Cliff had had a similar encounter with a creature, what he thinks was a creature, down in Beaver Creek State Park in Ohio. So more so than, you know, screaming or, you know, the typical calls that you think of, that grunt or that huff really intrigues me. You know, that's something you would connect with a primate, like a gorilla kind of action. And whenever I hear people describe it, it's always kind of the same. And it is unique from, say, like a deer or a bear that you might, you know, kind of attribute that to. It's a different, it's a more powerful, almost like a display of, you know, some sort of, I don't know, aggression, I guess, over the person that it's kind of grunting at. But we do have numerous calls and screams. You know, there's the, in Ohio, we have the Ohio Howl, which people always reference. And when we were down in Falk, Arkansas, filming Boggy Creek Monster, we were setting up for an interview down at a particular location where one of our witnesses had a sighting. And my sound guy and producer, Brandon, had just got his boom mic set up and had just started running the recorder. And Lyle Blackburn standing there talking to our witness, Doyle, and they're standing there talking to each other. And in the distance, we catch what sounds very similar to the Ohio Howl. And we actually managed to catch the recording. And when you play it back, you can hear it, you know, in the background. I've run it by a few different people that are, you know, intrigued by sounds, and they all thought it sounded suspiciously similar to the Ohio Howl. It doesn't sound like it's someone doing a recording playback, and it doesn't sound like a person screaming. And what was also kind of weird about it is we heard more than just that. We heard other kind of sounds as the interview progressed. There was also a really unusual incident down in that same location where I had actually heard something moving around in the brush, and then moments later heard what sounded like a ton of bugs. You know, like you can hear.
Yeah,
you know,
just like you can hear katydids.
Yeah, well, no, this is almost like, you know, when there's a dead body that's kind of like a rotting carcass in the, you know, like an animal body or something in the woods, how the flies will kind of settle on it, you know, and you can hear that sometimes from a distance. It sounded similar to that, you know, like I heard this sound in the woods that sounded like flies, just a ton of flies on something.
Just buzzing.
There was an odd smell connected to it, and this was all down in this one location. And that was probably where we caught the most unusual activity while we were down in Falk.
Seth, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and take some final phone calls for you. But this is remarkable work. You've been doing this for how many years now?
We're just going on 2 years.
That's it?
Of filmmaking, yeah.
Okay.
Now, Minerva Monster was originally a part of a book proposal for Small Town Monsters. I started working on the Small Town Monsters idea back in 2013. So this has been part of my life for, you know, a few years now. But yeah, as far as filmmaking goes, 2 years.
Okay, we're going to come back and take final calls before open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Seth Breedlove with us and your call. Seth, I'm beginning to discount, of course, the thoughts that these creatures are from other dimensions or extraterrestrial. I've ruled that out personally. How about you?
Yeah, I'm in the ape camp, actually, is kind of where I am. I think the evidence that we've got from, you know, the kind of, I guess, the tracks and the just the general behavior that I typically hear, it's more in the vein of an ape or a primate than it is, you know, some sort of ultra-dimensional being. I always think of this one particular thing that I gleaned when I was down in over in New York. We talked to a guy who's been doing investigations in New York for decades now, and he was telling us about these patterns that he had noticed where sightings were taking place in specific times of the year in specific locations. And, you know, he had noticed that there's this very you know, specific pattern where he's seeing sightings taking place in October and other times and things like that. And then later I came to find out he also believed that they were possibly alien. And I thought that was very unusual given the fact that the evidence he had gathered, you know, why would, just logically, why would an alien come to Earth and then follow up some sort of migratory pattern that doesn't even track for me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing, though. I always thought when I was a kid that this might be the missing link, the abominable snowman, Yeti, mm-hmm. that this is what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting theory there.
It is. It is. And to, I can't discount anything, really. You know, even cases like Minerva and Whitehall, we did take reports of UFOs and things like that that were connected with those sightings. In fact, the Eber incident, part of the Eber incident was a UFO flap taking place in Whitehall during the same week that the Bigfoot sightings were taking place. But I always think it's kind of a case for escalation, possibly, where, you know, there's these sightings taking place and it gets people worked up. Some people were out hunting for the creature, you know, out in the woods with lights. People are saying they were seeing lights in the woods. That's more than likely what they were seeing were actually other hunters out looking for Bigfoot. So in the Whitehall case, I do think there were UFOs around the same time, but I don't think the two were connected personally. Just, it doesn't make sense to me.
First time caller, Russ in Centerville, Virginia. Hey, Russ, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling, Russ. You there?
Listening to, are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear? Yeah, I started listening to you guys. We're listening to watching Mysteries and Monsters a couple years back.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a theory. I've been watching that nobody, as Seth is talking, nobody's really captured anything. The theory basically goes like this. These creatures are real to people. They see them. They encounter them. There's physical attributes that people are describing about how things are happening to them. These creatures, particularly the Tennessee Wild Man, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that story or not, but these people actually encounter them. And my theory is this: the Book of Job, God says to he says to Satan, he says, "No, listen, you can do whatever you want to these people, but you cannot kill them." And I believe what happens is that these entities come and go inside of our universe or in our world. They manifest themselves physically. And we can encounter them to a certain level, but I don't think they would have the ability to kill human beings just because of this story of Job. I was just wondering, one, has Seth heard of the Tennessee Wild Man, and what he thinks about my theory?
What do you think?
I've heard a similar theory as recently as about 2 weeks ago. We had a guy at a presentation post something similar to us that, you know, what if these are actually his was a little more out there. He thought that it might be like demons inhabiting bears and it changes the look of the creature or something like that. As far as the Tennessee Wild Man, I'm not 100% sure if I know what you're talking about. I grew up in this like subject kind of looking into old newspaper articles. So I'm certainly familiar with wild man sightings from around Tennessee, and I've got, you know, archives of those sightings, but I'm not 100% sure what you're referring to.
There are so many stories, Seth, of so many creatures. Have you gotten involved with Mothman yet in the New Jersey Devil?
It's on my list. I love those stories, particularly Mothman. We're real close where I am. We're actually very close to Point Pleasant, West Virginia. We're only about an hour and a half away. We're actually, Small Town Monsters is actually going to be at the Mothman Festival, which takes place the weekend before Minerva Monster Day. So you've got two huge, like, cryptid-themed festivals taking place back-to-back. But Jersey Devil, I've certainly looked into, and what I'm really fascinated with right now is Champ, the lake monster that's up kind of in Lake Champlain, which is, interestingly enough, Lake Champlain actually butts up against Whitehall, New York. So I think that's kind of what drew me to the subject of Champ when I was there. But I'm fascinated by all cryptids, and especially right now, I'm kind of trying to get at least after Boggy Creek, I'd kind of like to get away from solely doing, you know, these Bigfoot type cases. The problem with that, though, is that the predominant, you know, number of cases involve these upright walking hair covered creatures. That, you know, the minority cases are the Mothman, Champ, and, you know, it's just, they're not even comparable in terms of numbers. So it's easy to say I want to get away from doing Bigfoot stories, but once you actually start looking into small town monster cases where the, you know, the monster impacted the town in a major way, there aren't a whole lot of Mothmen or Champs out there.
No, not many at all. Next up, thanks for the call. Let's go to Nathan in Riverside, California. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I wanted to call in. First time caller, long time listener.
Great.
And George, you are a great man, and you keep me sane on my drive home.
Great. I'm doing my job.
Yeah. And I also wanted to touch on the Beast of Whitehall. Funny thing that came up because my uncle lives out there and he spent a lot of time up in the Adirondacks. And, I mean, really, it was just him and his buddies sitting out on the edge of the forest, I guess when he was still in high school, from what he told me. You know, having a few brews, and they heard a very loud howl, made their hair stand on end. And they stood up, started peering into the forest, and basically heard a screech. And a boulder bigger than a basketball came smashing through the trees past them, and they just took off.
Do you know where that location was?
I do not specifically. He lives in Rochester right now, and I was living with him for quite a while, a few years. And he just said that it was up by the Adirondacks in Whitehall. He had no clue where exactly at this point. It was just an empty lot and just a dirt road, he said.
I've taken sighting reports from hunters around Whitehall. You wouldn't believe that one of the curious things about the Whitehall case and the Adirondacks and New York actually in general is that it doesn't seem to me that people really are still very open to coming forward with their sighting stories. So I would get phone calls when we were filming from people who wanted to tell me their sighting story but did not want to talk about it on camera. And one of the really fascinating stories came from a hunter who had been back in the woods near Whitehall with a buddy of his and their dog. And they had heard a strange, you know, shriek, scream. And when they looked up, they saw a silhouette that he thought was probably around 8 feet tall in the trees, just a few, probably, I think he said around 40, 50 yards away from him. And when the shriek actually took place, the dog turned and ran 2 miles back to the car. These two guys actually took off out of the woods, and the guy has never gone back hunting. He's actually never hunted since then. He said at that point he was a constant hunter. He's out all the time, you know, hunting, and never went out again after that incident. But he would not tell that story on camera due to the ridicule factor kind of in that area that's still very prevalent.
More calls. Mike in Cleveland. Cleveland's going to be very busy next week. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George? Good morning.
Good to have you. Everybody ready for the convention next week?
Yeah, your call screener indicated to me that my call got routed through Canada, so Secret Service is doing their call capture right now.
How about that? Okay.
I just wanted to let you know we're being recorded.
All right. Hi, guys.
So what I wanted to get to you back with was, and ask Seth, is I tried to text Tom a photo. You know I run through cemeteries, and I saw a strange marker. And I looked into it, and I can't find any information on the marker. So the story goes that this creature worked with the military over 100 years ago because it's a military marker. But the creature is not buried there. It's buried on the battlefield. And Seth, it is in northern Ohio.
In Ohio? A battlefield in Ohio?
No, the stone is there.
Okay.
The marker for this creature, I'm guessing it could have been one of the first military contractors that was gathered and used for the military over 100 years ago that it's not buried there. It's buried in the battlefield. So, but there's this marker, and I can't find out any information.
But yeah,
If I showed you a picture of the marker, you'd be like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
So
I'd love to see it.
It's kind of hard to explain, but the only thing I can say is that it must have been a Bigfoot, that they captured a Bigfoot and used it for military purposes. And then there's a marker there in this cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange marker, but the creature is actually not buried there. I've been trying to find out information about it, and that's the story that I heard, that that's the name that they gave it, but it's not buried there.
Creature's probably long gone, the remains.
Probably. I just wanted to throw that out there. But, you know, I try to text Tom a photo of it, but you don't take picture texts. You only take, you know.
No, that phone doesn't take picture texts. That's true.
Yeah,
just copy.
I'll email George
email it to me. Yeah.
Of the stone, and I get too many things on my plate. I can't. You know, you guys can research it.
Okay, Mike, just do that. George@coasttocoastam.com. And I'll get it to you, Seth, okay?
Yes, sounds good. I'm in the Cleveland area, so.
I'm hearing rumors I'm on your radio show next week.
Yes, I just found that out for myself, actually, the other day, which is very exciting for me because I like turning the tables on people.
We'll have some fun, that's right.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be elusive this time. I'm kidding. Let's go to Scott in Oskaloosa, Iowa. Hey, Scott, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, howdy there, George.
Yeah,
Mark. Yeah, good to hear you're doing well. And this guy, you know, he seems real because he does have doubts and he admits it. I like that in a person that's as educated on this subject as he is. I just want to talk about two stories real quick for those sometimes that do doubt. And there's nothing technical to it. One was the story of the trapper that told his story to Teddy Roosevelt, who believed that until he died. The other one is Abe Canyon. I don't think all of those men, you know, could have lied. And I do honestly believe, I'll just make one more comment and then take it offline. I believe if different continents have different types of apes, why can't we have a North American ape? And thanks so much, and just have a great night.
Good night. Good comments. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I love these historical cases, George. They're kind of what drew me.
They're the best.
To the subject, is these older newspaper articles and the historical sightings from the, you know, especially the late 1800s and those kind of things. I have sighting reports, and they're not sighting reports, they're newspaper articles that ran for days on end here in Ohio, especially in Norwalk, from 1930, where they talk about an ape that people were hunting, an upright walking ape. And it's so detailed that I've got photos of the posse that went out hunting the ape. And this is 1930, well before Bigfoot was kind of, you know, in the public consciousness. This thing was, there's definitely something going on here, and it's part of what keeps me in all this is trying to figure out what it is.
Let's take one or two more calls here. We go to Nancy in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George. It's such a pleasure. I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. Hi, Seth. I'm trying to make this brief. My mother grew up in South Arkansas. She was the 12th child of 13 children. And I haven't been to Arkansas probably since about 5 or 6 years, but it's still kind of a really small town, and you know, the dirt roads are all red, and my family, after I got married, used to make fun of us kind of people from the backwoods, so to speak. But actually, my mother was in Dallas and a good registered nurse, but she always told us stories about. She was born in 1924, so this would have been about 1939 and maybe the early 40s. She was a basketball player, and her dad wouldn't let her go. So she would sneak out at night and go through the woods to get to the gym to play basketball. And she told me on numerous occasions something would throw something her way, or now she mentioned not a huff but and not a growl, but for some reason I remember her mentioning a screeching sound. And she said, you know, she was a real fast runner, so she said she would just zoom home. Now, every summer, I would go to Arkansas to visit my family, the Robertsons, and most of them are all deceased. There's still a few. And they, too, you know, I would go and spend a week or two there, and that's before they even had indoor plumbing, so you know that was a long time ago. But I just... when I woke up, sometimes I fall asleep listening, and I woke up and I heard that I had to call
in. I'm glad you did.
Tell the story because
great story.
Nobody ever believed my mother, but I did.
I gotta say, if she was walking through those woods at night, she must have been
pretty gutsy.
She must have been one heck of a brave woman.
Pretty gutsy.
Those woods, everything in those woods in Arkansas wants to kill you.
All right, my friend, you be well. Seth, you do a great job. I'll see you on your radio show, okay?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, Seth Breedlove, his website, smalltownmonsters.com, and, of course, his three documentary films, Minerva Monster, Beast of Whitehall, and Boggy Creek Monster, all great little films, so have some fun with that. I'm going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Open Lines next.